This week, the sky really is falling. Talk of widescreen video iPods, Dell backs out of the music player market, stories on the flash memory industry versus the iPod Nano, and wine is running on Intel Max. That's the context machine fodder for this week. Today is February 11th, 2006, and this is the TMO2Go Weekly Roundup, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup. We'll fire up the context machine in just a moment, but we can only put the machine to work once we've got the news in hand. So here are the week's stories. We've been expecting it, but I was intrigued this week as new stories surfaced about the possibility of running Windows and Windows software on Intel-based Macs. The OS X86 project has been able to get some Windows software running on an Intel iMac through Wine. Wine stands for Wine is not an emulator. Yes, that does create an irritating linguistic feedback loop. And unlike emulator software, namely Virtual PC, Wine doesn't require a copy of Windows to work. It actually re-engineers Windows system calls to enable those applications to run in Mac OS X. Of course, very few Windows applications run in Mac OS X through Wine right now, but the project is continuing to move forward. We also carried comments from industry watchers talking about various motivations Apple and others might have for running Windows on Intel Macs. We'll let the context machine sort out those issues in just a moment. Dell Computer has decided to bow out of the high-end MP3 player market. It is no longer selling its Dell DJ Music Player. Dell plans to continue selling its cheaper flash memory-based DJ Diddy MP3 player, which is more like an iPod Shuffle. It is similarly priced at $100 US, but includes an FM radio. Keep that in the back of your head, as I point out that on Tuesday, Apple released a 1 GB version of the iPod Nano. The new model includes the same features and form factor as its 2 GB and 4 GB siblings and is priced at $150. In conjunction with the release of the new Nano, Apple reduced the price on the iPod Shuffle. The smaller iPods, which have no display, are still available, but are now priced at $70 and $100, respectively. Interestingly, the news of the new Nano's release hit the stock prices of some flash memory manufacturers on fears that flash prices will continue to decline and eat into their profits. Flash memory spot prices dropped 20% in 2006. Toshiba and SanDisk, meanwhile, are pouring money into flash memory production facilities in Japan. When the plant opened last year, it had a maximum monthly production capacity of 49,000 wafers, but that number will be increased to 70,000 thanks to the new investment. Each wafer has space for thousands of flash memory devices. On that score, Piper Jaffray's Gene Munster on Tuesday issued a research report in which he assessed the impact of the new iPod Nano. He believes that it and the lower prices on the 512 MB and the 1 GB iPod Shuffle will allow iPod to continue to gain market share in the MP3 player space and grow the iPod footprint even further beyond its current reach. Mr. Munster was one of several analysts to comment on Apple this week. I mention it only as an indicator of the general reaction from Wall Street. Incidentally, Apple stock rolled around in the upper 60s this week, closing down at $67.31 a share. Moving on, we carried several articles this week looking into the rumor department of the Mac web and the mainstream media, which has gotten much more into the business of Mac rumors in recent years. For example, Portal Player, which makes the audio processor in the iPod, will soon add Wi-Fi and Bluetooth capability to its products. Insert speculation about future iPod models here. Apple is also rumored to be readying a music-related press event for a couple of weeks from now, on the occasion of Apple's 30-year-old anniversary. Supposedly, the invitation's image shows an Airport Express power light, which some think means the announcement will concern some form of wireless music or video. And then there's the big mama of iPod rumors. Various internet websites were buzzing on Thursday and Friday with the news of a true video iPod that Apple is supposedly readying for release. Featuring a widescreen that occupies the entire face of the player, such a product would also drop the physical click wheel for a digital version that will appear when a user touches the screen. Hold me back, people. I'm foaming at the mouth to touch one. Okay, I'm over it. Joining me now to machine some context around these stories is TMO staff writer Jeff Gamet once again. Jeff, welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Let's start with Windows on an Intel Mac, just as a concept. There was this story about Wine getting prepared for OS X, but even more broadly, let's step back and talk about Windows on the Mac. Everyone seems to agree that this is going to be possible. Why does that matter? What's going to be the impact?
Well, the great thing about being able to run Windows on a Mac is that you'll have one machine that can be, in essence, a repository for every operating system you could possibly want to use. At that point, it doesn't matter what application you need to run because you will be able to run the operating system for that all on one machine. I think that's a great idea.
And so who has the most interest in being able to dual boot or triple boot a Mac? Is this something that's really going to affect Mac users particularly? Is that the crowd that should be the most focused on this?
I don't think it's so much the Mac crowd, although there's a lot of Mac users that have specific Windows applications that they have to rely on. And currently they use things like Virtual PC, or they have a separate PC just for that. But Windows users that want to be able to experience the Mac environment, or Unix or Linux users that would like to have one machine to run everything on, I just think that's going to work out really well for people.
Now, there's it depends who you talk to. A lot of people say, well, a Mac is more expensive than a PC. Do you think it's likely that people who are used to paying the rock bottom prices for the commoditized sort of Dell PC boxes, do you think that they're going to have any interest in taking a look at the Mac hardware? Because you won't be able to run Mac OS X on garden variety Wintel boxes, is that right?
That is correct. Now, one problem that comes in is that you have a lot of people that are looking at the commodity PCs, and they're not people that look at a Mac for what it actually is. And what I mean is, if you take a Macintosh and then compare it to a comparably configured Windows machine, almost every single time that Windows machine will cost more than the Mac. Now, when you look at the what I call disposable PCs, when you're getting down into that $300 range, you have a very stripped-down machine, very limited, and the type of person that is looking to buy that machine is not the professional that really needs to be able to deal with applications across multiple platforms.
All right, so let's take a look now at these stories about the 1 GB iPod Nano. I personally am inclined to look at this as part of the larger story of the rise of the flash memory economy. The 1 GB Nano obviously never would have happened if flash memory prices hadn't been falling so rapidly. First of all, from the flash memory manufacturer's perspective, what does this situation look like? Is this a good situation for them or a bad situation?
I think it's a little bit of both. The problem that the flash memory manufacturers are going to have is keeping up with demand. If they can do that, the fact that the prices have dropped won't be a big issue because they'll make it up in volume. But if they can't keep up with the demand, they'll start losing money because companies like Apple are going to go to someone else that can provide what they need when they need it.
So I think that what you just said is kind of a key thing, and I imagine that a lot of people listening to this or reading the news might be confused by this, the good, bad thing. A lot of people might wonder, how can it be possible that there can be these issues with supplying enough flash memory so that the supply appears limited, but at the same time, the prices are falling? What's making all that possible?
Part of what makes that possible is the fact that companies like Apple can essentially strong arm. No, that's a bad choice of words. They can pressure companies into offering lower memory prices because they're buying in bulk. And so that gives this this impression that the memory prices are dropping. One of the other things that goes along with that is that the memory manufacturers were, and I believe they still are, artificially reducing the prices so that it would be more affordable and more companies would be buying the memory. And I think that's starting to bite them just a little bit.
And it sounds like what you're saying, rather than so much Apple strong-arming them, there's a big element of the memory manufacturers courting Apple or the other big consumers of this memory in order to lock in sort of marquee customers early on.
Yes, and companies like Apple, I believe, expect these memory manufacturers to do that.
And now from the end user's perspective, there was some discussion, depending on where you looked, about when the Nano first came out in the fall, that it had a lower capacity than the product that it replaced, which was the hard drive-based iPod Mini. Why would Apple introduce an even smaller capacity Nano?
There was a iPod missing out of their spectrum, and the 1 gig Nano fits that perfectly, especially since Apple dropped the price of the Shuffle. The Shuffle now becomes a perfect little, nearly disposable music player, and now at that $150 price point, or $149 price point, you have the coolness of a Nano at nearly the price of a Shuffle. And I think people are just going to pick these up as fast as they can.
Now, what you were just saying suggests that the iPod Shuffle is becoming disposable. Do you think that as flash memory prices drop, that eventually the Nano will completely displace the iPod Shuffle?
I hope not. And that's because I think there is a market for a very durable MP3 player from Apple. And as I sit here and look at my little Shuffle that I have in my hand right now, it just, there are no seams. There's no place for something to pop out and break. If it scratches, you don't have to worry about not being able to read the screen. This is a perfect little device for people that do outdoor activities, are athletic. I hope that they don't discontinue the Shuffle.
And it seems entirely possible that, you know, one of these days they might be selling it for $30, just a, you know, a 1 gigabyte bubblegum-sized thing that you throw your music on when you want to go running.
Absolutely. I see a day when the Shuffle goes from being in the nice box that it's in now to a blister pack hanging on the shelves in Walmart.
And now let's take a look back at we've sort of spent some time with the vendors, we've spent some time with the consumers, let's spend some time with the competitors. If you look at Apple's product line right now, they offer their intro-level product is at $70 right now, and then they hit every $50 price point between $100 and $300, and then there's a 100 jump until you get to the top-priced iPod, which is that 60-gigabyte video-capable model, and that costs $400. Then there's the story on top of that that Dell is backing out of the high-end MP3 player market. Is there any room in that price spectrum for competitors? It seems like Apple has done a very good job of sort of filling in all the places where someone could slide in a competing product. What can competitors do to go against the iPod?
At this point, the competitors are going to have to come up with brilliant ways to make products that are at least as good as the iPod. And that's going to be quite a feat to pull off.
What do you think makes that hard? I mean, in a sense, you've got the answer for the interface. Even if you don't have a scroll wheel necessarily, a lot of the interface answers are there. And if you look at, for example, the Creative Zen, a lot of the interface elements seem very similar. And people talk about the iPod as a brilliant user interface thing. What other elements do people need to get into place before they've created something at least as good as the iPod?
To compete with the iPod that way, they're going to have to come up with more than just the interface, of course. They also need to work on the design of the product. When you hold a Creative Zen or a Nano in your hand, the Nano just looks cooler, and that's a big thing with customers. And then beyond the coolness factor, you also have reliability, and overall, the iPod product line does have a pretty good reliability track record. The other thing that goes into that is that you need to take care of the back end, which in this case, iTunes handles. And if you don't have a nearly seamless way to be able to get to music or pictures or video, whatever that might be, and load it onto your portable player, it's just not going to work. You're going to have to come up with a whole package that's at least as good as an iPod, iTunes, and the iTunes Music Store.
That does seem like a reasonably tall order. Got to write all that software too. Well, let's move on. Last of all, let's talk a little bit about the rumor mill. First of all, is there good reason to believe? Do we expect there to be one of these Apple press events in the next couple of weeks?
There's rumors going around that Apple is going to have a press event maybe on April 1st, which coincidentally is their anniversary date. So, sure, we may very well be seeing some type of press event coming up in the next few weeks. Apple hasn't said yet, though. Now, if they do have a press release, the rumors are going around about possibly a new iBook or whatever it's going to be called, that uses a single-core Intel processor instead of the dual-core version that's in the MacBook Pro and the new iMac. And there's also talk about possibly a video iPod, not the video-capable iPod we have right now, but a completely new model that is designed to be specifically a video player that even has a touch-sensitive display instead of a click wheel.
So that you can grease up your display really, really well when you're trying to shuffle through your songs, right?
Right. And that'll be a really good test of the durability of an iPod, because if you're actually rubbing your finger on the surface all the time, if it's going to scratch, it'll do it then.
Yeah. And one other thing, some of the talk I saw was about actually Airport Express. And in a lot of ways, this seemed like the most rational thing of all the discussion, just from a strategic point of view. And I'm curious if you have any thoughts on this. Strategically, do you think it would make sense for the Airport Express, which currently streams music throughout the house, to also be able to stream video?
I think that would be a brilliant idea. And I think it's totally plausible. I read a press release somewhere earlier this week about IBM's new chips that are coming out that are designed specifically to link different home entertainment devices together wirelessly. Now, the chip that they're coming out with is designed to replace the physical plug that goes between the devices as opposed to being a network interface. But that's a totally useful product right there. If you throw something like that into an Airport Express, then you could stream content from your PowerBook, MacBook Pro, whatever, through the Airport Express and then wirelessly directly to your television.
And that seems like it would fit in very well with the maneuvers that Apple is making toward creating ways to get your media into the living room. There has been discussion when you look at what the analysts say about how Apple is the best positioned company of all the companies out there to make a move into the living room, to kind of take over the living room as the place where you start putting PC hardware into your living room. The Windows Media Center PC doesn't seem to have gained a lot of traction broadly. Do you think that's true, that Apple might have the potential to do that?
I think Apple does have the potential to do that. And all the pieces are there. They just need to go back together to make the home entertainment system. With Front Row out, that's a major piece right there. Then you have the ability to download content directly from the iTunes Music Store and play it through Front Row. You can hook an iMac or a Mac Mini or any other Mac directly to a television and watch this content. So now all we need is to have it thrown into one little package, and then to get the TiVo-style feature of being able to record live television or other broadcasting and play it back later. And I think if Apple can pull something like that off, it will have a killer product that people will line up for.
And one final thing, there was discussion when the Airport Express first came out. One of the most common criticisms, I know Walt Mossberg said this when he reviewed it, and a whole pile of other people said it, is, where's the remote? How am I supposed to be able to, you know, if I'm streaming music from my computer three rooms away, how am I supposed to be able to find my music? Do you think that there is reason to believe that Apple would work some kind of remote into this process, and does that seem like it's feasible and like it might happen?
Oh, sure. Thanks to Front Row, you have everything you need right there. It's just a matter of putting the hooks in to go and grab the content from the places you want it. There's no reason at all why you couldn't have a Mac-based home entertainment center box using that very simple remote that Apple has already created through a Front Row interface and do exactly what everyone is asking for. Be able to surf and look through all of your music stored wherever it happens to be in your home, send it wherever you want it to go, play it in any room, get your TV content and do the same thing there.
Fair enough. And of course, I always feel like there really ought to not be any discussion of rumors on this show, but I figured we'd talk about it now, because if it does happen, I want to be able to talk about all the strategic implications of that for all the other people in this industry on a later show. So that was not just idle rumor indulging, just so you know, Jeff.
That was speculation.
Well, thanks for coming on the show, Jeff.
Sure. Thanks for having me on.
Remember, if you have questions about the news or suggestions for future Context Machine topics, you can always send them to roundup@macobserver.com. Before we head out, let's take a look at the week's product news. Late this week, we reported that internet telephony company Skype will soon release a new version of its peer-to-peer voice over IP software for the Mac, with video and 10-way conferencing capabilities. The new features will only function on Macs with Intel dual-core processors. Skype's free software is used for telephone conversations over the internet with other Skype users. Skype can also connect to landlines or mobile phones for an additional fee. On February 26th, Digital Foci will introduce its new Picture Porter Elite Portable Photo Album. Say that five times fast. The device comes in 40GB and 80GB capacities and features a 3.6-inch color LCD, as well as support for all the popular memory card formats. In addition to letting users view, rotate, and zoom in on pictures, Picture Porter Elite plays music files and can record and play back video in MPEG-4 format. It also works as a mass storage device when connected to a computer via its USB 2 port. Digital Foci will ship Porter Picture Elite in May, with pricing set at $500 for the 40GB version and $600 for the 80GB model. Brian Dunning has announced Barcode Basics for FileMaker versions 5 through 8. The templates let you make barcodes in Code 39, Code 128, EAN 13, and PostNet formats. No special plugins or fonts are required, and the barcodes can be used in other applications. Barcode Basics for FileMaker is available for download at the Barcode Label website and costs $100. Mac Speech announced the immediate availability of a new script pack for Keynote 3 on Thursday. The Keynote 3 script pack lets users control Keynote through about 300 spoken word commands. The script pack requires iListen and is available for download at the Mac Speech website for $20. Nextworth has launched a new service called the Great iPod Exchange that lets consumers sell used iPods for cash. And here's one that caught my eye: Noodleboard, a free dashboard widget that enables users to share text, links, and other material through a virtual encrypted whiteboard. In gaming news, Dragonforged Software announced Blackjack Card Counter 3 on Tuesday. The game teaches you the rules of blackjack and shows you the statistical information related to card counting. Blackjack Card Counter 3 is available for download at the Dragonforged website and is priced at $15 US. Matrix Games announced the immediate availability of Star Chamber, the Harbinger Saga for the Mac, on Thursday. The game is a sci-fi themed card and strategy game in which you take control of worlds through military and political battles. The game is a $30 download. A boxed version will be available later in February. Toy Box Games announced the immediate availability of World of Dominoes Championship. I'm sorry, that's World Dominoes Championship on Wednesday. The game has various play modes and costs $20. And finally this week, Misha Sakalaropoulo discovers his favorite low-priced leather iPod case and also takes a look at the clever Pocket Dock iPod accessories. And that's the news. Thanks for listening to the Weekly Roundup. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer, and our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom for TMO. And don't miss TMO2Go's other podcast, the Mac Geek Gab. Stay subscribed, and until next week, we'll see you online.